The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Marvel Vision, a podcast about Marvel, the MCU, and right now, X-Men 97.
Yes, get your 97 neon blue shades on, because we're talking X-Men.
I'm Who's Alex? Crying?
Oh, everybody's crying.
I'm Cyclops.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to, in case you couldn't figure it out, be talking about Episode 5, Remember It, of X-Men 97. I give a spoiler warning here, but I think the entire world at this point has watched this episode. This is the episode that broke everybody's hearts. I can't believe I was crying in the club, a.k.a. in my coffee in the morning, so hard watching this episode. This was wild. Just to give a quick bit of recap, just in case anybody's listening to this, you know, 5,000 years in the future or something. Right.
When the Sentinels are coming for their buddy, their French buddy.
Yes, the X-Men make the crack decision to send their love triangle that is all hitting each other's heads against each other, Magneto, Rogue, and Gambit, down to Genosha, where Genosha is going to be inducted into the United Nations. There's a whole ball. There's a celebration over the course of it, and Magneto gets invited to be the leader of Genosha. His one caveat, he wants Rogue to be his queen. Seems like Rogue is going to agree and break up with Gambit, but things change, at which point a master mold attacks Genosha, kills hundreds, if not thousands, of mutants, wrecks the whole place. By the end of the episode, Magneto is dead, Morlocks are dead, Gambit is dead, many, many other characters. Banshee just straight up gets fried. Sebastian Shaw.
He got one line in. One very heavily Irish line out.
And meanwhile, back at the X-Mansion, Trish Tilby, crack reporter, is on the scene with today's top story, making Cyclops as sad as possible. And she's going to stay on that as long as she possibly can.
She nailed it.
But we do get a bunch of other things going down there, including, I can't believe, in an episode where Jean kisses Wolverine, we find out that Cyclops has been psychically making out with Madeline Pryor. That's the thing that, like, nobody's talking about. Like, that is the all the way down the list on wild things that happen.
There is too much going on in this episode, man. You got to prioritize.
Are you still on that? Because I want to go back to the Marvel flip, because they listen
Last
episode, we all agreed, except for one of us who didn't care.
I abstained from this debate.
Come on.
Marvel, they had the Marvel sound, and then they went into the X-Men theme versus just kicking right into the X-Men theme over the Marvel Animation logo. They did the right thing this week. Thank you for listening to the podcast and responding appropriately.
Well, crime that this is what we're talking about right now. I'm just saying, this is a criminal situation.
We're talking about what is important to us, and the Marvel flip is important. So they have this animation thing, which is also a promo for Marvel Zombies. You know what I mean? You get a couple flash images. It's like, stay tuned. So I think it's
Can we talk about number two on my agenda, if that's right? Number two on my agenda is, it cuts too quickly to the next program when you go to the credits. It's very hard to watch through them, see who was in the show.
Yeah. You know what we got here? A couple of Trish Tilbys trying to do journalism, and you're blowing it.
Don't accuse me of journalism. I've never claimed that, sir.
This episode was insane. This episode was incredible. Yeah. There's not enough superlatives for it. I was completely blown away. Like, this,
I clutched my non-existent pearl necklace.
There's been a lot of very over-the-top praise for this, being like, they shouldn't even do a live action X-Men at this point. Get out of here.
That's
this
not
is the
praise.
Best episode of TV that's ever been put on TV. I'm not quite at that level, but legitimately, this was a fantastic episode of television that I think kicked this show 100% to the next level.
Well, and let me say,
I want to talk about how it's an attack on entertainment journalism. I mean, the FC what? News or whatever that they have in there. I mean, come on.
You're talking about Trish Tilby again?
Yeah. Yeah, I am.
Again. She's the Marvel Flip.
She's like, yeah, Cyclops, I see you're losing your mind, but you're going to keep the cameras rolling. Beast, if you could clutch your eyes again like you're really stressed out, we'll take that Beast in slow motion. Yeah. And then also, but what's it like to find your true love? Because, here's the thing.
I don't mind if we're actually going to talk about this. Like, I don't mind Trish Chilby being like, I'm pursuing the story of what's going on with Cyclops. The X-Men are celebrities. I want to find out. It is very funny that she's like, no, don't put me in Genosha, which is the biggest story in the world right now. I got to go to the X-Mansion, and I got to talk to Cyclops until he gets so pissed off he walks out of this room.
But I know we're making fun about what she thinks of classes. You know what I mean?
The thing is, though, like Trish Chilby wasn't. She asked him, like, "Hey, how's your son? You just had a baby." Yeah. She doesn't know he went to the future with a techno-organic virus. The only one to blame here is the X universe around them.
Cyclops. Absolutely. Cyclops is who's to blame.
But hold on, let's take it back.
Shitty leader.
Just because everything happens on this show all at the same time doesn't mean we have to have everything happen at the same time. Hold on a second. We're always going backwards and forwards at the same time, just like Nathan Summers himself.
Let me say that I
don't think this is the best show on television, but I think this is a transcendent, like, animated show, and especially Marvel property, Marvel piece of content. Like, not only were they able to, like,
like Riverdale, but with X-Men, man, this shit is getting crazy.
Well, but you can explain that in a second. But, like, what I'm saying is, like,
I'm agreeing with what Justin's saying.
Not only is it, like, doing a lot and telling a lot of story and being very, like, it's giving us the comic book, it's giving us the show, but it's also giving us this, like, tonal energy thing. Like, the scene with Rogue and Magneto, it was beautiful, and it felt like it was just a totally different
scene where she floated down from the sky after she was like, "Yo, Gambit, peace. I'm not only saying fuck you to this whole thing, I'm gonna float down in front of everybody and sexy dance and then make out in front of everybody at this giant gala." Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, it was beautiful.
I was just sitting there like, trying to get the fucking knives out of our backs who are trying to ship this couple
on the bike,
and
man.
She casually just throws it all away and then celebrate this new idea in front of everyone.
Now you're ping-ponging. You're ping-ponging back and forth.
Wait, are you pro Gambit Rogue or Magneto Rogue? I am trying to just get a sense.
Are you serious?
Just because they're both dead, but which corpse would you rather,
bro?
Which corpse would you rather she date?
Yeah, Here's the thing, granted, Gambit's corpse is there, so they could do like a Weekend at Bernie's dating
when
thing. Magneto was fried.
Holding him finally for the first, maybe touching him for the first time as he's like dead and she's crying. Like, I was bawling my fucking eyes out, bro.
But that's what I'm saying. That was an idea, complex and beautifully shown, and not just like laid out in exposition to us, that they have been trying to in Marvel movies for years now, and they just absolutely nail it here. It's unbelievable they were able to, at the same time they're dropping in like Easter eggs, 15 characters we haven't seen ever on television or anything before.
Dude, they kept showing the same four, like they were the only one who lived in that fucking city. It was like, oh, there they are again.
No, they're showing them because we want to identify with them when they're attacked and some of them are killed. Like,
I just thought it was hilarious that it was always the same.
Bob Herman.
I agree. It's a mutant nation of potential, probably not millions of mutants like it was in the comics. In the comics, it was very specifically 16 million mutants because that is the number of Jews that were killed in the Holocaust. But this is probably a little less than that. Regardless, like, yes, they are showing us Leech. They're showing us Pixie, Glob Herman. We get to see Dazzler a bunch. Archangel shows up. Madrox. I'm definitely forgetting a couple there.
Exodus, Dazzler.
Oh, yeah. Exodus was the wild one to me.
Exodus was wild. A ton of great Nightcrawler stuff. I thought he was just really well done and able to bring in his religious.
Hot, dude.
his religious edge without it being like a whole big exposition, I thought was just really beautifully done.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, they nailed Nightcrawler, which that was the same voice actor who did the voice back on X-Men, the animated series. But to your point, he's a complicated character with a lot of stuff going on. He flirts. He's a swashbuckler. He's deeply religious. He looks like a demon, but he can teleport. They crushed it. Like, all of that stuff.
He's wearing, like
you're
a
saying,
kind of G-string kind of, you know, weird thing.
Lots of things going on there.
The Borat bathing suit.
Yeah, he's doing the Borat V, you know.
He did it first.
I gotta say, the hardest I cried in the episode is when Nightcrawler said, "My wife," because I remembered Sacha Baron Cohen and Isla Fisher just broke up. So,
dude, let's not. There's a lot of heat.
Wow, in an episode of Insanity, you're adding more.
Yeah, let's not. Jesus Christ.
Yes, Nightcrawler, great. Can we actually just for like focus, because I think we can mostly get it out of the way, can we talk about the stuff in the X-Mansion? Because that's a little easier to deal with. I do think the Trish Gibbley stuff was great just in terms of being like, I don't know, it almost feels like there's a subtle thing of, first of all, they make every episode, and I know you made fun of me the last episode, but they really strive to make every episode accessible. But this episode, I think they knew this is the one.
What was accessible about this episode? This was going at 90 miles an hour.
Literally having Trish Tilby being like, "Who are you? You're Jubilee. Talk about your thing. Beast, who are you? Talk about your thing. Oh, Cyclops, what's going on with you?" It lays out all the plot, but then also pushes, at the very least, Cyclops and Jean forward, which is the most dramatic arc there, as well as Wolverine. Pete, I want to ask you, because we get this scene where Jean's trying to figure out her memories. They're all a mess after Mr. Sinister messed with her. Wolverine comes up, talks to her about going back to Cyclops, and Jean kisses him. He turns away and is like, "Nah, go back to Scott, because you always go back to Scott." And that's what she does, only to discover some other information there. You didn't think they were going to have a kiss last episode.
In your face, Pete.
Not in your face. How'd you feel about that? You're a Wolverine Jean shipper, I think.
Okay, first off, if we're going to talk about it right now, you need to back the fucking truck up, okay? So, we're getting
start with the Marvel flip.
No, no, not that far.
Wolverine, let's go, Wolverine.
So, they're having this discussion, but you're also realizing that here's Wolverine, who is being the, you know, shoulder for Jean again, kind of like this person who she knows how he feels. You know what I mean? And she's just like, yeah, I'm just going to complain to you about this love that I have and not show you any affection. Like, up until that, all the things that she is saying is brutal to Wolverine. I literally wrote my notes. This is driving me insane the way that she is treating him. She is just like, I was heartbreaking to watch. And then she turned and kissed him and I dropped my phone, and I could not believe.
Your phone?
Yeah.
Were you out of calling with 911?
No,
you're like, "I'm having a heart attack. Help."
Hey, Justin, just like you in a movie theater, I'm watching something and I'm taking notes on my phone, you fucking piece of
It's all weird for you to say I dropped my phone. I don't know.
Anyways.
Yeah. The weird part is, just to be clear for anybody who doesn't know, Pete's using a rotary phone.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyways,
take notes on.
I could not believe
you dial in the 9. It means R, S, and T. It's like T9.
I could not believe what I was seeing. And then I could not believe that Wolverine was the first to pull away and be like, "No, that was unbelievable to me." Because he knew, he was like, I just was so shocked that was the choice. And I had to hit pause and try to collect my emotions of what just happened before I could keep watching. It was such a crazy emotional rollercoaster of like straight hatred for what was happening in this show. And then the fact that like something that I've always wanted to happen immediately followed that feeling. And then to have Wolverine be the one to pull away. Like, the highs and lows of that is insane.
Well,
Just absolutely insane.
He probably felt bad because he knew it was a little shady to be sliding into the Jean's
because he's a decent person.
The phrase is slipping in those jeans.
I mean, yeah, for a mass murdering berserker rage machine, he has morals, and it's really very touching.
So let me ask you, Pete, you're Wolverine's wingman. You're like a second Wolverine next to the Wolverine. And he's like, hey, I'm the best.
Second Wolverine? They'd never do that.
Like a sidekick. Like his claws are a little shorter. Mm-hmm. His little hair spikes are a little tinier, a little grayer.
What did you call it? Like X-23 or?
You're a Pete Verine. You're a little Pete cub. You're okay. A Wolverine cub. Cubby. So you're a cubby, and you're right next to him. And he's like, what should I do? Are you like, get in there, man. Go talk to her. Or are you like, hey, man.
I got to pick my jaw off the floor. I'd probably like stab myself in the head or something, you know, die and then come back to life and then just be like, what did I just see? I might kill myself again just out of shock.
Real quick, Pete, you know how you were going to be my wingman Saturday night? Please don't.
It's too risky.
Sorry. Right. Yeah. I'm busy. I'm doing something else instead.
But once collected myself, I would say, you know, first off, that I got to tip my hat to you, the fact that you were just like, hey, Gene, you know you belong with Scott or whatever.
Well, can I throw something out there? I saw a interpretation of what's going on with Gene, which I really liked. I don't explicitly know if they're doing this, but it does feel like something potentially they could be playing with, continue to play with more, is that they're treating Jean like a survivor of assault. She was literally assaulted by Mr. Sinister. Her memories got mixed up. He tortured her. He used her. He abused her. I'm not even necessarily saying like the sexual assault, but I think like there's a metaphor there to be dealt with.
Spell it out.
And I do, because I'm talking about a thematic thing. It's something that she is dealing with and continuing to deal with. Again, I don't know if they're going with this, but to take it a step further in terms of what we're talking about Wolverine, that feels like exactly the sort of thing Wolverine would understand, because he was also abused. He also had his memories taken away and jumbled up.
He references that as well in their conversation.
So I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that's why he turns away, is because he knows in that position that's not the right thing to do. It is, I think, even less to do with Cyclops than the fact that, like, this is not Jean acting on Jean. This is Jean having wild swings of emotions because she doesn't know how to wrestle with what she went through and the trauma she's currently dealing with. And that's really smart and nuanced, and it's hard to watch, but it makes the character dynamics, particularly because Wolverine most of the time this season has been like, cool your jets, bub. And that's pretty much it. To suddenly throw this in there, it's something that the show does really well, is just tonal swings from like goofy scenes to suddenly something that is deeply serious and incredibly thematic.
And that may be, I'm not knocking that, but I did think it was interesting that when it goes down with them, it's less about her talking about that. And she's like, hey, I waited for you. I gave up the Phoenix Force. I stopped that to be with you. So to me, it was like,
to Scott. She says that to Scott. Scott. Right.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying later. I'm talking about the metaphor you're putting out there. So to me, it was like the relationship politics and breakup politics just writ large. Because when they get into it, they've got baggage. And I think the Mr. Sinister assault case you're making would be a part of that. But I like that they developed – she had more agency than she would have if they had solely done that. It gave her a place to fight against Scott about – especially after she discovers him having the classic White Queen cheating scenario from the comics come out over the course of their conversation.
Two quick things that I want to say about that. First of all, we talked a little bit about the fact that like – they changed the Madeline Pryor Jean thing in the comics. Madeline Pryor looks different. Like, people comment on her looking like Jean. She is kind of a Jean clone, but at the same time, they don't look the same. They at the very least have different hairstyles going on. Here, it feels like having these two Jeans was almost to lead to this moment where Madeline comes in and is talking to Scott. We don't have that information. And then Gene walks in and is like, what are you doing? I'm sure you guys had the same reaction. But watching that, I was like, what's happening? What? And it took my brain like a second to catch up with the action. That was great. Like, absolutely pulled the rug out of everything we know.
I agree. Very well done. I also thought it was funny that Madeline Pryor's in a meeting when she's making out with Scott. She's like deciding the future of Genosha. She's like, oh, what's that? Sorry, I was making out with a dude in my brain later.
Sorry. Just the second thing that I wanted to mention, just if people don't know, and I think this gets into a bigger interesting topic about this episode, is you were mentioning the White Queen makeout. If you don't know, this is from Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely's run on X-Men, which became New X-Men when they took it over. And in it, Scott was having a psychic affair with White Queen. Very different circumstances. Still, Jean walks into the white hot room where they're making out and discovers them and discovers it's been going on for a while. It leads to a Cyclops-Emma Frost relationship. It's interesting they're riffing on this.
Yeah.
Not to jump ahead to the end, but the destruction of Genosha, as we mentioned earlier, down to the look of the Master Mold, like this giant cockroach thing, is right out of E is for Extinction, which is the first arc of New X-Men. And this is not 90s X-Men. This is late 2000s, 2010, something like
late
that.
Late aughts, I believe.
Yeah, something like that. Whatever it is, it's like a very different era. It's way beyond 97. And we get even further afield to that with the Genosha stuff, because it touches on not just House of X, Powers of X, which at this point is from like 4 or 5 years ago with the Mutant Council, but also the idea of having a gala completely obliterated by a mutant threat is something from the Hellfire Gala issue that came out last year.
Yeah.
So this is just like a wild swing forward from.
Yeah, but also on. Are you talking about the, you know, just when the, before they blew up Fuck Island and there was, they had that big gala and then they burned it all to the ground? Is there,
yeah, Hellfire Gala 2023, which happened less than 12 months ago at this point in the comics. I do think at least there's a little bit of a reference, though I'm sure they were developing this beforehand. But then just last thing I'll say, a lot of those characters we mentioned beforehand, like Glob Herman and others, also come from New X-Men, because one of the ideas Grant Morrison had was not every mutant would be pretty, so and not of them, all
or,
of them would have
or meet. Have useful powers.
Exactly.
Yeah, then we got gold balls.
Yes.
Well, I think that was Bendis who did that, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was Bendis.
But I would say I feel
I know
like
there was a lot of stuff I threw out there.
Well, yes, and sure so sort of going in reverse order, I feel like all those comics, if you haven't been reading the comics, going back and reading Grant Morrison's run, it feels like that's probably the most direct pull here that they're using a lot of. And I think the seeing Pixie and Glob Herman is that, is sort of a nod to that. But I also feel like how they write this show must be wild. They must have all this stuff on the wall because the way they are slotting things in and just like – combining it is just, it feels so tricky. It feels, it must have been such an organic process.
I'll throw something out.
A lot more and just kind of like really cut down to like, what is this?
100%. But I'll throw something out there even bigger. Like all of the stuff that led up to this episode, and I'm not remembering all of it, but has been layered in previous episodes. So Beau DeMeo, who is the former showrunner of X-Men 97, he was fired by Marvel and has stayed pretty much entirely silent this entire time. Certainly he hasn't talked about the firing or what went on. But after episode 5 dropped, he reactivated social media and started talking about it. I have a whole note that I could read later on that he posted that I thought was really fascinating. But the main thing that I want to bring up is he's talked a lot about, like, if you look back at episode 3, when Madeline Pryor, I think it's Madeline Pryor, has a vision of the future, it has the Master Mold head, it has Nathan showing up kind of presaging Cable, it has the Latin lyrics at the beginning of Ace of Base's Happy Nation playing over it, all these things layered in there. But he also mentioned things like in the first episode, Trask being like, you're all holding hands now, what happens when things go wrong? I'm paraphrasing there, but like, they layered it all in. Like, they clearly, this is one clear case where writing the full season, or at least the half a season, we can't talk to the next 5 episodes, was enormously successful, because to the point we're talking about, Like, they knew what was happening at the end, so they could make sure that they could reference it at the beginning and go back and tweak and put those things there, which is great.
It's amazing.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
But going all the way back to the Madeline Pryor Scott cheating thing, the only difference here is in the White Queen story that was from the comics, he was cheating on Jean with White Queen. And in this, technically, he's with the girl, the woman that he was had a baby with.
Yeah.
He was so like, I think the Scott Madeline relationship actually makes more sense.
So wait, let me just get this straight. So if your wife comes back in time, you can hook up with your, even though it's a completely different person, you're still living with your wife and your family, but because it's your wife from a different time period, that's still okay.
I mean, no matter who is the original, it's who you marry is sort of who you marry, and he married Madeline. Right? It's not like if you're dating, if you're a twin switches, it's not like you're like, I'm married to you now. It's not how it works. So Scott,
I'm not saying you go with whoever. I'm just saying you have to at least have a discussion about what's okay and what's not. You know what I mean? You can't just assume making out with a younger version of somebody is going to be cool with the current version of that person.
Of course, but I think the logical thing. And
I'm just pointing out that Cyclops is a shitty leader, hates humans.
That's your agenda.
Is just a bad boyfriend.
But I think I don't know how you guys felt about it, but back in the day when Cyclops was with Madeline Pryor and they decided to bring Jean Grey back to life for X Factor and they were going to be a team again, and he was like, great, see you later, Maddie. I now live on Apocalypse's ship with my ex-girlfriend, Jean Grey. That was shitty. That was bad behavior, and he should have been with Madeline Pryor. So I kind of agree with you, Justin, and I think that's what this episode was showing us as well. Obviously, it's complicated, but at least for now, this version of Jean should be with Wolverine and Madeline Pryor should be with Scott, or maybe Scott should be with
It's easy. We solved it. But yes. I want to say, I know you hate Scott Summers, but I really like the way that this story is unfolding where he's the one that blows up. He's the one that makes the mistake when it would always be another character. He's under the most pressure.
He lost it in front of a camera crew. He's supposed to be leading teams of people. Listen, I'm not, you know, I lose my shit all the time, but I'm not somebody's leader. I'm not in charge of a team or anything
Here's what I speculate?
No. We started down this road and I wanted to finish it because I wrote down some of the things. When talking about humans, said you people. Yikes, Scott. I mean, come on, bro. I know it's 97.
I love your Scott Summers burn book.
I know it's 97. But then later he said, I don't see color. And that was his next line. Like he was trying to make up for the you people. And I wasn't buying it.
Your cat's I think his point is he literally doesn't see color because he has lasers coming out of his eyes.
I'm just saying. Next thing you know, he's going to be like, oh, yeah, this is Bishop. He's my black friend. It's like, come on, dude.
Can I just throw out there, and I think you'll feel this, Pete. Do you know what the X-Men need? Is an HR department, right?
Yeah.
Could you imagine the HR person for the X-Men being like, how long do you think they would last? 2 hours?
I bet his mutant power better be complete indestructibility because he's done for.
Here's what I was going to say about Cyclops. Wait, before we move on to that, this is getting
also that whole thing. He didn't even get his team there when they were all getting their ass kicked. That war went on for a while, and he's just crying at home. He is a shitty leader.
10 minutes. The mastermind leader. No, that is not.
People
absolutely
are dying. He's just like, did the camera crew leave? Because I got new tears.
Pete,
like,
Magneto's the leader of the X-Men in this iteration right now. So Scott's not even leading. So get off
no
his
shit. This leads into what I wanted to say, shit. And then we can move on to something else, is canonic. I think we're getting to the next canonical point with Cyclops in the comics where Xavier is off the board now. Magneto is off the board. When we first started with the series, Cyclops was like, all right, I'm ready to step up and be the leader I need to be. Magneto comes in, pushes him off. So he's like, okay, I guess I'm a father with a baby. And then his baby disappears and his wife disappears and he doesn't know what he's doing anymore. I think we're going to move into the more militant Cyclops who's picking up. And this happened to the comics as well. Like, he still believes in Xavier's dream, but he's sort of 50% of the way between Xavier and Magneto in terms of being like,
agree.
They attacked us, not mutant supremacy, but we got to protect our own. Like, we got to circle the wagons and we got to protect our own. We got to get on the attack.
Do you see the Magneto was right sign?
All over the place. I also wonder, and I hope this doesn't happen, but I wonder if we're going to get that stupid X mask that he had where it went over.
I hope not. I don't like that. But I agree with you. It was in his language in the interview. And Pete, I'm not saying I agree with Cyclops. I'm just saying this is a much more interesting character who does make mistakes than the Boy Scout that it felt like we were getting in the first episode and was going to carry through.
Wait, I want to throw out another theory. Do you think we're going to get Schism? Schism, for anybody who doesn't know, is Wolverine and Cyclops end up at odds and ultimately end up leading to very different X-Men teams. Cyclops a little more Magneto-ish and militant. Wolverine taking over the school in a hilarious fashion.
It was all the best stuff happened on the Wolverine side of the school. Cyclops was being like really weird, and when we're talking about, you know, whatever, but Cyclops, we're really kind of seeing behind the curtain, and you're backing the wrong horse, guys. The Cyclops is not the team to get on, dude.
Well, anyway, this stuff I thought was great for a B plot in particular, wild things going on. Let's get to the A plot because this is the
last thing I'll say before we move on is I don't think we're going to answer your question. I don't think we're going to get Schism, except maybe. The final, maybe that's what sets up the second season. Because I think at this point, especially after this episode and what we're about to talk about, this team needs to come together, not split apart. And I think they will.
Yeah, we'll see. So we get a whole Genosha plot, and there's so much going on here. The bulk of it, at least the first half of the episode, is this love triangle and figuring out what's going on with Magneto and Rogue and Gambit.
Come
and
on, Rogue.
Every single one of these scenes is an absolute banger.
Cannot believe it.
Ugh, unbelievable.
Yes, all of it so emotional. I just I love seeing Magneto in this place where he's wrestling with both his better and worse angels. That's such a good place to put him. The flashback to the Savage Land from, I don't remember what issue, like X-Men.
I called it Savage Land.
You did call it.
I did call it. Well, that's from it was the subplot in the second season of the animated series. So I think that's major. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Magneto and Cyclops, or Magneto and Professor X being in Savage Land.
Yeah, but the Rogue thing, that was in the second season as well?
No, that part wasn't, but...
Okay, but that's the Jim Lee, Chris Claremont issue, like that classic cover of sort of like the adventure book of Magneto standing there and Rogue in the torn costume below him. That whole thing I thought was great, treated very, very well. I also think that kind of put like a lot of the, I don't know, age gap discourse down there because they seemed very much on even footing in that scene. You could still make arguments, I think, in the real world, but just in terms of these characters, I thought that was really good. And then all the stuff with Gambit, because we've talked about this, he's been so down this whole season. Like, he is clearly the third wheel every single time. What he went through and his ultimate sacrifice at the end, I know we talked about like not being too effusive. Maybe the best Gambit story of all time. Like, I can't really think of a better one. Well, so
and just him going from being like the 90s half shirt Ken doll a couple episodes back to being the emotional crux of the last couple episodes, and then getting to be not only this huge emotional character, great badass fighting, and then make this sacrifice that I don't think anybody saw coming and was amazing. Best use of his powers, like very like he is, because I thought it was telling, they're like Omega level mutant and it was Magneto. And they're like, we got him. And they moved on. And then Gambit was like, check me out, motherfucker. I'm Omega level, and takes out that Master Mold.
Oh,
Oh my god! That whole thing, the way that it was animated, it was like very intense, straight up anime. The whole thing with the tentacle at his side, lifting him up in front of the Master Bald face, lighting it up. But the second he smiled and he was like, "Name's Gambit, remember it," and then lights it up.
But we need to back up the truck. I mean, the part where Leech was like, "I'm not afraid because Magneto promised," and Gambit rolls through and fucking saves him. I was like, "Oh my god!" And then we have the amazing action sequence. Mm-hmm. So, like, the fact that he was just winning all over the place in so many, it was just, I was standing on my couch. I was so excited. It was just so fantastic.
I have a question for you as our X-Men the Animated Series watcher, because I don't know if this happened in the series, but I saw somebody mention this online, which I thought was smart, but if it doesn't happen in the series, doesn't matter. So in the comics, there was a crossover called the Mutant Massacre, where the Marauders went into the Morlock tunnels, killed all of them, slaughtered them. They ended up blowing out that plot exponentially. I know you know all this. I'm mentioning it for the listeners, where it was Mr. Sinister who was running the Marauders. And then much later on, like years and years later, it turned out that Gambit was working for Mr. Sinister. And he was the guy that I believe gave them the codes to open up the Morlock tunnels and get in there.
Right.
Ultimately, you know, he joins the X-Men and becomes a hero, whatever. But somebody was like, and I thought this was so smart, him saving the Morlocks in that scene was redemption for opening that door in the Mutant Massacre. Did that happen in the show at all? Or
in the animated series, I think the Morlock Massacre was, they had the Callisto stuff and Storm stuff. That happened. But that wasn't done with the Gambit thing. Gambit, in Genosha, they think he's betrayed them in season one, I believe. And turns out he doesn't. But they, I think that's where they use that idea from the comics. Okay. Is he is, it's like he's given up on the X-Men, and it turns out he hadn't.
Yeah. I still love that idea. Just as like taking from a comics reader to this thing, even though it doesn't follow plot-wise, I thought that was really nice. The moment also when Magneto dies and is shielding Leech, it is hard to talk about. Like, I'm getting a little choked up thinking about it. So good. Looks at him, speaks to him in German.
That was so good. And I feel it cements Magneto as a hero. He's wrestling with this idea in this episode. I feel like the show is sort of like, he's in charge, deal with it. And we're all like, I don't know if I like this. And then he gets to be, to go out a hero here, I thought was great.
Yeah.
Very smart.
It's also, I'm curious to hear if you guys had the same reaction, but the first half of the episode is so packed with so many emotional things leading up to that Happy Nation dance sequence we talked about, which is joyous and sad and romantic and all of these different emotions where you're like, oh, I feel awful for Gambit. Oh my God, all this stuff is going on with Madeline Pryor at the same time. Wait, what's going on with the psychic connection between Madeline and Jean? And then Cable comes in and all hell breaks loose. And that
oh
is,
my God.
Not only just Cable shows up, which is a very X-Men the Animated Series thing to do, but then we get this emotional moment where Cable, his mother sees him. I was like, Jesus, guys, leave one in
Sorry,
the chamber
Mom,
for us.
You're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, can I mention
That's
also
why I say you can't just walk into this clean. When you see Cable and
we're not clean.
I don't want to argue about this
but I'm just saying.
But I think at the same time, like, they set it up. They talk about their baby's eyes and how they lost him and his beautiful brown eyes in the episode. So you might not know who this Cable guy is, but when he jumps in and Madeline is like, I recognize your brown eyes, Nathan. And he's like, Mom, I'm sorry I was too late. You get the gist of the emotion, even if you don't know what it is. It's so good.
And they set it up. I think they had Cable and Apocalypse fighting in the opening credits. That's enough.
I just wanted to point out, Alex, you're talking about there was a lot of emotion. That's emotion for you, because I wasn't going through all that emotion when the Jean thing started. I was just – or when the Rogue thing started, I was like, Rogue, what the fuck? There's a nice way to break up with somebody and flirt, you know, in another room or something, but doing it like this is just so fucked up.
There's only one person she can touch in the world, you know. Might may as well throw a touch in there. That was That was legit. That was
like, that was too
it was
much.
Harsh. Of course. But at the end of it, it was also very sexy and sexual at the same time, very public on display. It was made in a way that I was like, yo, this show's for kids. Get out of there. I'm having complicated feelings about it. And I'm a grown up. I'm a capital G grown up, despite all of the words I've said in the
and
last.
And your hat being sideways
minutes.
On your fucking head.
100%. But, and then when she
and
finished
you wear
that,
baby t-shirts most of the time.
Okay, let's leave it out. Okay. All right, Trish Tilby, leave me alone. But then at the end, she's like, you know what? I don't know if I can do this. Mm-hmm. It was so intense in every direction, but then it was coming back. And then, like, to sort of scoop it all up, after the big battle, to end the episode on her holding Gambit, touching his skin, after we emphasized so much that she could touch Magneto and could never touch Gambit, said she loves Gambit, wants to be with him, and the only time she gets to touch him is his dead body. That was one of the most beautiful little mini arcs of a show. It's unbelievable how good it was.
We're going to fucking cry again, you asshole.
Yeah. If we can take a little bit of a side trip to talk about Bodeman.
Wait. Yes. Okay, listen.
He has to cry publicly on the mic right now.
No, I've been doing the entire time.
One thing that I didn't consider until Zalbin said it, I didn't think Magneto died in this episode. Just because of all the other things going on. I thought he saved the kid and his dome held up and they were just covered in rubble or something.
No, I don't remember what he said in German, honestly, but there was a theory floating online that maybe that's what his mom told him in Auschwitz, and that was right before she died, which I was like, oh,
Jesus.
My God. Also, but you're probably right at the same time. When he got fried, Gambit is dead as well. There's so many options for getting out of this. Like, you have a time traveler, Cable, who's Cable's literally like, oh no, I'm too late again, as if he's in a Groundhog Day-esque time loop trying to fix this thing. So there's 100% a possibility they could come back. But I kind of think, just to throw it out there, I kind of think Gambit is dead, Magneto is going to come back somehow. Like, they're both dead, but we are going to get Magneto back now that he has had that redemption arc. The thing that we're going to have to live with is Gambit being gone and that absence.
Interesting. I feel like Cable being there makes everything. And it's such an X-Men, the animated series, thing to just keep doubling back, keep fixing and unfixing and fixing the timeline. So,
well, let me read this it's a long – okay, yes, Pete.
Now – I want to talk about the Magneto of it all here. Like, you know, it was nice to see when he was kind of going through that page, that kind of what looked to me was like Hebrew writing a little bit, a little nod to his origin, which I thought was a cool, you know.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't, by the way. It was definitely 100% not Hebrew. But
I thought it was meant to at least look like it as a nod to it.
Potentially. Like, everything in the episode is a mishmash. Like, at the beginning, they're very clearly doing Wakanda, even though it's Genosha.
I know. Then that was strange, I thought.
Yeah, I was like, we already have that. It's okay.
Yeah.
But then we get into, like, a lot of this, clearly, as we're about to talk about, and he speaks very explicitly about it in his statement, but, like, we're talking about LGBTQ plus culture when we get to the ball, like that's straight up. And I think that speaks to X-Men as a metaphor for so many prejudiced against groups. Like, it's been so many things throughout its history, and sometimes it is all of those things. So I think that was kind of the point there, is like, we're kind of LGBTQ plus culture. We're Jewish culture. We're all of these other things at the same time.
It's about hatred. It's all X-Men has always been about hatred, and it's about putting the essential metaphor is that, like, anyone who feels hated unreasonably by people.
So let me read this because A, it's long, and then B, I think it.
What are you reading right now?
Is this Bodeman a love letter? Yes, wrote me a love letter, and that's why he got fired from Marvel. Bo DeMeo on X posted a whole statement about this. He was responding to things for a while, and then he put something through. And I think it illuminates a lot, just not just about this episode, but the season. So here's what he says. A lot of questions, and so I'll momentarily break silence to answer. Episode 5 was the centerpiece of my pitch to Marvel in November 2020. The idea of being to have the X-Men mirror the journey that any of us who grew up on the original show have experienced since being kids in the 90s. The Worlds was a seemingly safer place for us, where a character like Storm would comment on how skin-based racism was, quote, quaint in One Man's Worth. For the most part, to our young minds, the world was a simple place of right and wrong, where questions about identity and social justice had relatively clear-cut answers. Then 9/11 happened, and the world turned against itself. Things weren't so safe anymore. Grassroots populist movements began to rise around the world as a whole nation struggled to deal with collective trauma and fracture at the seams of every diverse demographic. The effects we still feel today and have only been exacerbated by more collective traumas like COVID or several recessions. For me personally, 9/11 was also when I came out of the closet to my family and realized not everyone would accept me. It's when I entered college and noticed that certain groups avoided me, or that a Supercuts in Tallahassee refused to service me because they didn't do, quote, ethnic haircuts. Reality, as Jubilee found out in episode 4, got very real and very scary. This happened to many people. We had kids and got jobs with high stakes. Suddenly, it wasn't enough for us to survive. We had responsibilities, and people whose survival depended on us meeting those responsibilities. We were growing up. If you were like me, you would actually watch old episodes of the OG cartoon to comfort myself and take yourself back. God knows I did during COVID, but just like Roberto warned Jubilee, there's a danger of living in the past and clinging to nostalgia. There's a danger to not letting go of who we think we are. As Cyclops and Jean are learning, it leaves us stagnant and dangerously unaware of a future we didn't anticipate. Yes, it looked like Gambit's story was going in a specific direction. The crop top was chosen to make you love him. Him pulling off his shirt was intentional. There's a reason he told Rogue any fool would suffer her hand in a dance, even if it ended up not being him suffering. But if events like 9/11, Tulsa, Charlottesville, or Pulse nightclub teach us anything, it's that too many stories are often cut far too short. I partied at Pulse. It was my club. I have so many great memories of its awesome white lounge. It was, like Genosha, a safe space for me and everyone like me to dance and laugh and be free. I thought about this a lot when crafting this season and this episode, and how the gay community in Orlando rose to heal from that event. Like many of us who grew up on the OG cartoon, the X-Men have now been hit hard by the realities of an adult and unsafe world. Life's happened to them, and they, like we did, will have to decide which parts of themselves they will cling to and which parts they'll let go of in order to do what they've been telling humanity to do, face an uncertain future they never saw coming. As Trask told Cyclops in the premiere, you have no idea what it's like to be left behind by the future. Now the X-Men do. And like each of us, they'll have to weigh whether this is a time for social justice or, as Magneto preached at his trial, it is a time for social healing. So lots there, very deep. First of all, incredible statement. It sort of points to the amount of thought that he and everybody else really clearly put into putting together the show. But it also clearly lays out there that events like Pulse nightclub, as he talks about the shooting there, that I want to say, I don't remember the exact numbers, but over 100 people dead and wounded at the end of that, just for dancing. That was what he's clearly calling out on the Genosha Sheens. That's what we're playing out here going forward. We'll see how that plays out.
Wow, that was a great statement. I it's shocking that he's not involved in this anymore for some reason that we don't know. So it's hard to say anything not knowing that. But that was just great words to give context for this episode.
Yeah. And the one other thing that he threw out in another tweet that I'll mention that I wanted to mention earlier is he called episode 5 the warm up and said that episodes 8 through 10, which is a 3-part finale, is the thing where everything goes down. So,
oh my God.
How? Now I'm scared.
Yeah.
I want to stop watching.
Incredible episode of television. Before we finish up here, let's go to our vision board and talk about what we think is happening next. We kind of know what's going to happen next episode. I believe the next episode is Life Death Part 2. So it's going to focus very squarely in on Forge and Storm. I think last episode of our podcast, I thought that was this episode. It's not. It's next week. But what do you think is going to happen next? Just like we're halfway through the season. One thing that I will mention, not a spoiler because they put it in a promo, but they put out a promo today as we're taping that shows off the end Captain America's shield coming in. So I think we're going to get some more Marvel Universe stuff showing up, which people are going to lose their minds over. By the way, we didn't even talk about the Watchers showing up halfway through.
Wild.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
So that's a great, I mean, that to me, to expand the scope, they have so much going on this show, to expand the scope out to have the Watcher here and Captain America coming later, that is, because what are we going to get? Because there's a way to do it with the flashback to the Claremont story with Black Widow, Captain America, Wolverine, that's a little more contained. Or are we going to get some, like, onslaught situation where Captain America's and the whole Marvel Universe is there?
Man, I don't know.
Or is it going to be like a Civil War situation?
I'm not sure. I love the idea of the onslaught situation where suddenly it brings in the rest of the Marvel Universe. Like, maybe that's what he's talking about. And it just stays on the X-Men, but expands into that stuff you were talking about where it's just like Ghost Rider in the background. And they mentioned Spider-Man and he shows up and the Avengers are swinging through and fighting and everything. And everybody is just melting down online. I could see it happen. This show could do anything at this point.
But yeah, honestly, sure. I don't want it to get the scope to get that big. I want to keep it right where it is. This is massive storytelling here. We don't need more. We don't need wider. We just need more.
Or we could just, like, you know, slow down and deal with things one at a time a little bit. You know,
get ready for next episode then, I guess. But then after that, here we go. Can't wait.
I mean, I think we're going to get Cable. We're going to get some time travel. That's why I'm curious if they are going to leave Gambit dead. Because the way that statement reads, it feels like it is.
That's before that, I was like, X-Men, they come back all the time. After that reading the statement, I was like, oh, wait, no, he is a symbol for what they're trying to do with the show. And if he stays dead, that's important. You could bring Magneto back as, like, Joseph, his younger clone, or literally, for anybody who doesn't know, there was just a book called Resurrection of Magneto that finished up yesterday where Magneto was resurrected. So I think he comes back once Cyclops has really found himself as a leader so that you could have that there. And then maybe once Cyclops is really leading, everybody had stepped up, end of the season, Xavier comes back and that messes things up again, because a lot of this show, I think we started with Cyclops and I think he is the focal point here of just, like,
to me, my X-Men
between every character, but specifically Trish Tilby fucking with him as hard as possible.
All right. Well, I think we're going to get Hellfire Club straight into Schism.
Great. I don't know what you mean by that. Also, Hellfire Sebastian Shaw is dead. I think we might get Emma Frost on the team. That could happen.
Oh, yeah. Once you show the White Queen, it's,
you never go Bean. That's what I always say. Why don't we wrap up on that note for no particular reason? If you want to support us and all the podcasts, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We definitely could talk more about X-Men 97. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. At Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, stay marvelous.
I can't believe life. I feel like we just both lived and died. Now we have to go do life death again. That's crazy.